Blog Talk Radio.
What do they want with us anyway?
It's obvious, isn't it? Minerals.
Minerals?
Yeah, minerals.
Oxygen they want.
Oxygen?
Think about
it. What difference does it make? They're here. They're winning. And whatever it is, they're gonna get it.
Shouldn't you be over there?
I've been over there. More times than anybody. As a matter of fact, I'm usually long dead by now.
Coward.
Power's gone.
Skills.
You're now listening to 13 Revolution Radio.
Turn me off. Cover your ears. Because you don't want to hear this kind of truth.
You ain't got time to be playing around. You got to learn all you possibly can to make it in this world.
We're exposing this thing today.
It's not the money that buys you a future. It's your skills that buy you a future.
And we ain't got no time to fool around with people who are just playing at this.
And now, here's your host, Minister Dawood Mohammed.
Muhammad is his last and greatest messenger. As long as I live, and hopefully I live long, I can never thank Allah enough for giving me my teacher, the Honorable Minister Linwood X. I greet my brothers and sisters once again with the green words of peace of Assalamu Alaikum. It is my pleasure, my humble honor to be here on these esteemed airways of Blog Talk Radio once again to have the blessing and opportunity to give you the message of revolution, reconstruction, and renaissance, to continue to put forward the message of land, infrastructure, and nationhood, and teach it in the style of science, strategy, and spirituality. I'm so happy to be back. It's been a two-week layoff. Fortunately for me, your brothers and sisters are now showing me more support. My numbers are going up, and I'm really grateful to Allah that you're having patience with me. I know I reschedule and things like that. I'm not going to give you any excuse. You know that my life is busy. You know what I'm about and what I focus on. But this is very important to me because it's like I was talking to my father the other day, and we were talking about some of the disgusting, despicable things that we go through as black men in this country. And he stops and he says to me, he says, are we ever going to have our own nation? And I say, Dad, I'm working very hard on it. And so therefore, that particular goal, that particular basically vision was placed upon my shoulders and my heart by my dad since I was younger. And not just me, but many others, because I don't want to act like I'm the last Boy Scout or the final soldier. But for me, this is very personal. It's the culmination of the Black Power movement. It's the culmination of the struggle, the civil rights movement, the human rights movement, everything to do with black people resisting being dealt with as second-class and third-class citizens. That in and of itself is personal to me when it comes down to land, infrastructure, nationhood, and the prospect of revolution, reconstruction, renaissance. And so therefore, brothers and sisters, I'm very happy to be here with you today. I'm not going to hold you very long. I have some very important stuff to address tonight, and I have something very personal to talk about in maybe the third or fourth segment. Listen, please don't be offended by my music and my hip-hop. I'm feeling very nostalgic. You can tell when I play hip-hop like this that I miss Brooklyn. I haven't been there in a while, and it's been cold. I've been on the road a lot, and so I haven't really been able to go back there and recharge my spiritual batteries. I'm going to do that. So please just, you know, disregard that or join in and have fun. But, you know, that particular song between Shantae and Biz, I can remember I was so poor back then. And when she said, throw on my Felice and my Felice suit, it's like everybody, you know, Felice, the sneaker cost like $50 back then, which was a great deal of money. Now you can buy Kanye West sneakers for like $600. And so this shows you where money has gone and how far it has come in America. The price of goods and services and things have gone up. But the reality of the situation is black people still are coming in last, and not because we don't want to do anything or we're lazy, but because in some cases the odds are rigged against you and I. And so therefore, let's get on into this, brothers and sisters. Let's not even play no games no more. Let me read the monologue to you real quick. My whole young life has been spent struggling to come to grips with the good old boy system,
whether
by white America or black power plantations. At what point does what you do or can do count more than who you know or how long you can wait? I do not thrive well in good old boy networks and handout-based systems. If we are to create a nation state for black men and women, and I'm a part of it, it must be a meritocracy, period. And I say again, if we, you, me, we, whatever group you're a part of, whatever nation you say you're a part of, whatever organization you say you're a part of, whatever consciousness you hold, if we are to create a nation state for black men, black women, for Muslims, for Hebrews, for Moors, goddamn it, for anybody, and I'm a part of it, it must be a meritocracy, period. So let's get on with the get on here. Let's get on with the get on. Abu Ali Muhammad says in a book called Fall of America, let me just dialogue this particular story to you so you can understand where we're coming from. Look at the Muslim condition of Alabama. We went there to buy a piece of land from a citizen of Alabama, and then some white enemy appeared who calls himself a preacher of the gospel of Jesus. But he did not forget to preach the gospel of the devil along with it. This devil, Mr. Bishop, we hired him when we first went to the farm in Alabama. He worked for us on the farm digging holes to help us to get set up on the farm. At that time, he said nothing to us in the way of charging us with being there illegally. Why did he hire us out? Why did he help us to get started on our farm? We hired him and paid him for his work, and there was no talk from him in the manner in which he was talking now. So this man has now turned to be a real open enemy, not a secret enemy. He even goes so far now to even talk of killing us. We are losing cattle from bullet wounds, and he's speaking in the direction of even destroying our property and cattle. He even makes it hard for us to buy gasoline, and the most ignorant and worst thing is the gas attendant sells us the gasoline, and then we are arrested and charged with a crime for buying the gasoline instead of charging the man who sold it to us. It's very ignorant. I want to go back and say this again. He even makes it hard for us to buy gasoline, and the most ignorant and worst thing is that the gas attendant sells us the gasoline. And then we are arrested and charged with a crime for buying the gasoline instead of charging the man who sold it to us. It's very ignorant and silly. Okay, so let's from the bottom, baby and sister, and work our way all the way to the top. See, for me, in my life, if you listen to my monologue, if you listen to my past radio shows, if you know me, if you're in contact with me through Facebook or any other venue, then you would know that I have fought all my life against one enemy and one enemy only. It has been contained and it has been manifested by both black skin as well as white skin. And what it is basically the construct that I refer to as good old boy networks. It comes in the point, or it comes in the form of the Black Power Plantation. It also comes in the form of American democracy. But good, bad, or indifferent, what these constructs have in common is they come off as if they're fair and balanced. They come off as if all you have to do is pull up your bootstraps, work harder than the next man, show up early and stay late, spend all of your time, your money, your hours, your blood, your sweat, and your tears. And one day you're going to come up. One day you're going to be prosperous and you're going to be, you know, the person that everybody would look up to, a so-called self-made man in America. And it's never about, you basically work hard to get there, and then basically one day you'll look around, you'll find yourself being well-to-do, you'll find yourself you're rich, and everything is cool. But you and I both know that that's a bunch of garbage. We know it's BS. We know it's crap. We know that, quite frankly, if you don't know nobody, you ain't going nowhere. We all know that if you don't have the right connections, it doesn't matter how hard you work, it doesn't matter how early you show up, it doesn't matter how late you stay, but the reality of the situation is that if, in fact, you don't know the right people, you ain't going nowhere, and you're just going to be treading water, you're going to be in quicksand, and sooner or later, either your body will give out, your health will give out, your emotions, your anxiety will give out, and you will give up. And the funny thing about it is you will look over the aisle and you will see your white counterpart, or you'll see your sellout counterpart, and you'll see them rise and you'll see them do less the work that you do, maybe a quarter of the work that you do. You see them get promotions. You see them get internships. You see them get opportunities and loans and things like that, and you'll ask yourself, what the hell? I thought it was all about my merit. I thought it was all about my merit. I thought it was all about me just basically doing what I needed to do. And what ends up happening, brothers and sisters, is that you realize that you're not in a merit-based system, but you're in a system that basically just gives out or just basically deals with people who are favored. And so therefore, brothers and sisters, be that as it may, and it is as it may, when you really break it down and you really understand it. If you have had contact with the book called Outliers, if you have ever listened to the great Malcolm Gladwell, then you would know that the formula that they give you and the real formula is two different things. You would understand that the reality of the situation is that if you want to be an outlier, it takes hard work plus opportunity plus time. And all three of those are the key to success. And when you look at it, brothers and sisters, you have to ask yourself, if you, yourself, are in a merit-based society, if you are in, you know, brothers and sisters, give me a second, we'll be back.
What are you looking at? Get back to work now! Get back to work!
The matter before the council is simple. We are under attack. 6 times in half as many weeks, William's kind have reached our very walls. What mayhem would follow if just one of them got through?
Your fear, Coloman, is misplaced. Are we not protected by an army of immortals?
Superbly, my lord. However, the nobles are not. And as I have pointed out, they are the grass on which we graze.
If we cannot protect our humans, it makes us look weak.
And how would you project strength?
As our death dealers patrol the night, so our daylight guards can patrol the day.
Lycans patrol outside the walls. Have you lost your mind? They are born of beasts, and the savagery of this despicable fact cannot be bred away.
I think your fear of this idea is misplaced. We can create a privileged class of Lycans. Greater rations, finer quarters, and put them under the hand of one we trust. Perhaps your pet Lucian, the one who saved your daughter's life today.
Well, sisters, I'm terribly sorry. I'm terribly sorry. I had to take care of something real quick. Okay, and we're back. So therefore, where was I? Basically, the one I was at was the formula given by Outline, which says basically hard work plus opportunity is the key to success. And the question is this: how come so many black men and women struggle so much in American society? Is it because we use drugs? Is it because we're all lazy? Is it because we just want to freeload? Or is there something missing? And the reality of the situation, brothers and sisters, is that the main missing ingredient to your and our success is opportunity. It's really just that simple. Because the reality of the situation is that not many of us want to be on welfare. In fact, I don't know nobody who wants to be on welfare. I don't. You know, I've come to people who have accepted it. I've come to know people who have been born into it to some degree, but even they don't really want to be on it. But when there's no other opportunities, what are you supposed to do? Because some people will just not do the dirty work that is left to them. And quite frankly, for you to get opportunities, like I said on my last show, unfortunately for you to do so, it takes a certain level of lessening or lowering yourself. Or in other words, you have to turn gray. And so therefore, brothers and sisters, let me just say this as I get ready to close out. And it's very simple. When I was out there selling drugs for the short period of time that I did so, and again, I could care less if you believe me. I could care less if you think I didn't, but I did. I knew dudes who would be out there for 24 hours, for 48 hours, for 60 hours. I mean, I knew dudes who would be out there for 3 days and would take no dose of coffee. And, you know, this was long before the energy drink phase, so if there was energy drinks, I could just imagine what would be going down there. But there would be dudes out there, and you'd be like, damn, yo, what you doing out here? And a brother would be like, look, I just got to get this money. You're telling me that those dudes are lazy? And it'd be females, too. You're telling me that them brothers and sisters who would stay up 3 nights or 4 nights to make money selling drugs, they are lazy? That's what you're telling me? You're telling me that these people, they are freeloaders, and they just, you know, they just want to get by? Because you working on your 9-to-5 job, you're not staying up for 3 nights in a row. You're not staying up for 4 nights in a row. And you have to deal with police, and you have to deal with crack fiends, and you have to deal with people, you know, that's in your industry trying to stab your back. Basically, do you understand the picture that I'm drawing for you here? The bottom line is this, brothers and sisters. When you live in America, there was always going to be some kind of limiting principle for you, no matter what you do and what industry you're in. And we, the brothers and sisters of the BAIO, the brothers and sisters of the law group, we today stand for the creation of a nation state that will be based on meritocracy. We'll be back.
The treating water gon' kill more people than AKs. Mess with your mental like watching porn in the 8th grade. Go get a girl, cornbread thick and homemade. We do this for the people suffering and underpaid. 5-year-old boy, 100 pounds overweight. They don't teach us about the credit scores and how they rate. We be boxed on the tables, watch our future fade. Daydreaming in class is what the teacher hate. High problems with anger and can't communicate. Been betrayed by society, so we dominate. Don't tell your mom you gangbang and she just want a baby. Maybe we can win a lotto, maybe God'll pay me. Turn into a zombie or get caught in a tsunami. Learned about the lessons on talk from Marcus Garvey. It's amazing how the matriarchy took the car keys. I just wanna build, take a trip in the RV. Turn into a zombie or get caught in a tsunami. Learn about the lessons on talk from Marcus Garvey. It's amazing how the matriarchy took the car keys. I just wanna build, take a trip in the RV. Look into the mind of a freeman that had to balance hard to get even. As above, so below is the season. 360 degrees of completion. I wish I could escape to a planet in stellar, cause the planet be small like the mucus of a caterpillar. Still amazed by the Egyptian hieroglyphic architecture. Step out of the road, step forth by your oppressor. Pound on the ground like a juggernaut, ego tester. Never wearing polyester, only the finest textures. Egyptian cotton, you're a shepherd, I'm a knotting. I'm the lesson, I eat fools like you for breakfast. Your professor is racist, the land is cultivated, taken seized by a rapist. But you still turn on the TV, watching the Lakers. Money's everything in the eye of the maker, but have the maker.
And we're back, brothers and sisters. I hope and pray that you can be patient with me today. I'm trying to manage a lot of different things at the same time. However, there's some very important points that I need to get across, and we will get across. I do have to do a little bit of reading. I know some of you tune me out when I do reading, but I'm asking you to reach into your intellectual toolbox and have a little bit of curiosity, because when we do these kind of shows, we want to do more research and we want to bring it to you. We want to bring you opinion and commentary, but we also want to bring you information and we want to bring you actual facts, because, quite frankly, I just think that in some ways, a lot of you may think, well, this is just Minister Dowell's opinion. And no, it's not Minister Dowell's opinion. It's a, you know, these are documented facts and figures. These are historical events that, you know, basically come together to give you and I a picture of what was and what will be if we keep going the same road that we're on. And if we don't try to solve this thing, if we don't try to acquire land, if we don't begin to control our own infrastructure and declare nationhood, quite frankly, we are on the same path as those who we read about. So let me read this to you. This is a book that I credit my dear brother, Mr. Holicism, for putting me onto, and it's called Freedom One. It's a book that I read from time to time, but it deals with slavery in the basically in the Caribbean, and all those bastards who inflicted that particular kind of colonization on our brothers and sisters on those islands. I think that if you listen to what I'm about to say or read, you will see an eerie parallel to from them to you and I. Listen, check this out. Okay, this is chapter 3, which is entitled New Rights, Old Wrongs, 1804 to 1890. It says, the ending of the apprenticeship and other transitional slave systems in the Caribbean colonies and the coming of full freedom meant that freed people had total control over their social movements for the first time. They also had greater bargaining power over their working conditions. Some even exercised their right to move into new communities and to bargain for better working conditions. Most of the former enslavers, however, did their best. Listen, most of the former enslavers, however, did their best to limit the rights of workers' bargaining power. This chapter examines how, when or why freed people exercise their liberty, as well as the problems they faced in doing so. It also examines why large-scale landowners, landholders complain that they had a labor problem, and what some of them did about it. Now, part two is this, brothers, and please bear with me a little bit more. Okay. Many employers made note. When we say employers, by the way, you know who we're talking about? We're talking about white folks. Many employers made no effort to encourage positive labor relations or maintain a reliable labor force. They did not try to negotiate fair wages and adequate working conditions with workers. Instead, they chose to use different kinds of coercive strategies, in other words, trying to convince you against their workers to force them to remain on the plantation. Now, listen closely. This is where it gets important. This resulted in many freed people choosing to leave their states. Too often, employers, did not support free people's right to choose where they wanted to work, what job they wanted to do, how long they wanted to work, and how many days. It was not easy for free people to choose to leave the states. Okay, so let me zoom down. The following are some coercive, in other words, convincing strategies that landholders used in British colonized territories and which created disaffection amongst the workers. They used magistrates and police as agents of labor discipline. That sound familiar? They increasingly used schools, churches, and missionaries to get free people to believe in so-called virtues of humble work, social order, and good manners and obedience to authority. They increasingly use schools, churches, and missionaries to get free people to believe in the so-called virtues of humble work, social order, and good manners and obedience to authority. Many landholders refused to switch to the task work system as they preferred to hold on to the day labor system. On some Jamaican livestock farms, for example, the farmers refused to allow free people to work paid by the task and a change that long before been made on sugar plantations. In other words, they wanted you to work for volume. Basically for time. They did not want you to work according to, the pieces that you produce, or the amount of, a case-by-case basis, in other words. So if you did more and you did greater quality, you wouldn't be paid for that. Everybody would basically be paid the same thing. You'd be paid on principle. Isn't that just the way things are now? But the thing that I find that very interesting and kind of horrifying, but I also find the part where they said they increasingly use schools, churches, and missionaries to get free people to believe in the so-called virtues of humble work, social order, and good manners and obedience to authority. Now, to give you just a little bit of background, brothers and sisters, okay, to give you a little bit of background for me, myself, all right, before I do that, let me just say this. In this chapter, one of the things it talks about is the fact that once this particular colonization was declared unconstitutional and it was over, people had the right and the opportunity to stay and work on the continent, on the plantation, but most people did not stay there because they were traumatized. And basically because they had very bad memories of these particular conditions that they basically worked under slavery. They was like, hell no. I mean, you may turn the farm over to me, or you may give me the right to work for more money, or you may give me a little bit of freedom. I'm not staying here because I was treated like, I was treated like an animal when I was here. And so let me talk to you now about my foray into the security industry. See, I, said this before, but there's some of you who are new, so just bear with me, y'all. I came out of school. I wanted to be an artist. I wanted to be a comic artist. Went to school, guidance counselors didn't really guide me correctly, but at the same time, I should have had a plan, so I can't really blame all of that on them. But they sure enough didn't do me any favors, and they sure enough didn't try their best to help me to figure out the right course. In fact, they tried to discourage my course, and I can attest to that no matter what anybody says. So regardless, I ended up flunking out of school because I wasn't that focused, and I ended up going through the hood. Eventually, I come through the nation, and then after coming through the nation, I get into the security industry as a locksmith. What I find out as a locksmith, which is funny, is that if they keep you in the shop and you basically just cut keys and rekey cylinders and deal with stuff and sell hardware and stuff like that, well, you learn the trade, but you really don't learn the trade that the part of the trade that makes the massive amount of money. Because the greater amount of money was doing installs, doing service calls, repairs, troubleshooting, and things like that on the road. And quite frankly, there was no opportunity to do that for me because my boss would tell me that I was working for, oh, man, your hands are too clumsy to hold the tools. Now, mind you, they weren't clumsy to hold the tools in the shop. They were just too clumsy to hold the tools on the road, okay? And I said before, I was an artist, so I think I had pretty delicate hands because I used to paint. Either way, it's neither here nor there. So basically I was kept in the shop, and they had a plan to keep me in the shop for 10, 20, 30 years. Because he was like, I see you as a shop person. Everybody has a specialty. That's how I see you. Whenever you allow somebody to determine who you are, what you're going to do, they tell you what they see you doing and impose the vision and plan that you have, then you realize now that you're not working under a meritocracy. You're working under a good old boy network, and they're convincing you to stay at the level that you're at, and they're going to basically promote the boys that they want. So I saw crackers come off the street that never lifted a screwdriver, never lifted a hammer, didn't know nothing about the industry, and time after time after time, they would try them on the road, and they would fail because it took a certain level of curiosity, intellectual curiosity. It took a certain level of commitment and dedication. And quite frankly, brothers and sisters, you brothers and sisters out there who think that white people work harder than us and they're smarter than us, you are out of your cotton-picking goddamn mind. You do not realize how lazy these people are. You do not realize how these people do what they can do to take shortcuts and get around corners. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's 4:30, they're out at 4:20 or 4:15. I mean, you have no earthly idea. And if you hate yourself that much that you think that just because they are pink that they work harder than you, that I don't even really know what to say to you. I don't. Because you're living in a different world than I'm living in. Because I live in the real world where we work hard and we look upon those with that skin color as a people who are lazy as hell, branding us as being lazy, and get over art. Real talk. Real talk. And it's just that simple. When I look at these bastards on Fox News and MSNBC and all these other places, and they're trying to brand me and my people lazy, I look at you with disgust. But I also have like a slight smirk on my face because I know full well in all the industries that I've been a part of, you have done nothing but try to cut corners and do less work. And as soon as you get a hardworking person, a black person on the job, all you do is try to find a way to work them harder where you can work less so you can so-called use your brain. Figure deal me? And so therefore, what happens is this. When they do finally get a black person on the job, they put in a limiter. We're going to talk about that electronically a little bit later. But they put some kind of limiter in there so that you cannot move up, and you basically have to be stuck doing the manual labor. They do not want to give you any opportunity to do any of the intellectual work or any of the paperwork, because if you, that is usually what pays more, and they reserve that for themselves because they are not really down to be doing hard, rigorous work, brothers and sisters. What the hell part of that don't you understand? And so here it is, I'm in the security industry, and I just said the hell with it. I mean, I had got a reputation for being a hard worker, very courteous with customers, clean, showed up on time, stayed late. I ended up getting hired at a level watch list, and they finally gave me the opportunity, but a limited opportunity to work on the road. They had other ideas for me. And the ideas that they had was they were going to let me work at nighttime. They wanted me to take night call, and they wanted me to do some automotive work because automotive runs in my blood. My dad is an excellent automotive locksmith, aside other things. So they had an idea what they wanted from me, but it was very limited. And what I'm saying to you now is, do you understand what I mean? As long as you stay here, you work for these people, you will only have limited access to that which is going to be lucrative and help you take care of your family. It is not built on your work. It is not built on your loyalty and your dedication. How many black men worked for these damn companies for 30 to 40 years only to realize that they never even scratched their potential because they were limited for so many years? How many black women worked in these companies and got slapped on their behinds in offices and dealt with their sex objects and they never really got their true potential? And the lazy, oh man, I was getting really cursed. But either way, brothers and sisters, to me, if you're out there in the black power community, if you're out there in the conscious community, and you are talking about building the nation, but you are talking about building the nation on some kind of socialist model, in other words, you're saying we all scratch each other's back, and it doesn't matter how hard you work, we all get the same portion, you can count me out of that. You can count me out of that today because I already dealt with that with white folks and I dealt with that with black folks. I work hard for my money. I work hard to be where I'm at, and all I ever wanted was the opportunity. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said to us in our Warmth of Belief, he said, we want equality, but we want equality of opportunity. We want equal opportunities as everybody else. That's what I always wanted. I do not want to be in no nation where you can show up with your lazy behind and you can get the same amount of rights, the same amount of portions, the same amount of food, everything else that I get, and you don't work hard. And again, you may think, well, that's contradictory, brother. I didn't say all black people work hard. I didn't say that. I didn't say that. I didn't say all black people naturally work hard. I know there's some that don't. I know there's some that work harder than others. And what I'm saying to you is that we should build a society that rewards you for your differentiation. Do you know what I mean by differentiation? I know I'm going off the strain off the topic, but I have to say some of the stuff I'm saying. When you have studied something, when you have invested yourself in something, when you have put yourself, you read the magazines, you've taken the classes, you read the books, you have read the information over and over till you can recite it. Eventually what happens is you get vision. And when you get vision, the vision gives you an insight into what you're doing that's completely different than anybody else. So they will pay you for your vision. They will pay you. People will come and they will give you money, you know, whatever you want, because you have differentiated yourself. You're better, and it's a better quality product. It's a better quality service. You can, I can show up to a place. You can show up to a place as a person with limited knowledge of security. And you can say, well, this needs to be fixed and that needs to be fixed. I can show up and I can write volumes on where your security is weak. And that's the difference between me and the average person, because I live, sleep, eat, and die this, brothers and sisters. And all I ever wanted was more opportunity, but I do not want to kiss no white person's behind for opportunity. I do not want to snuggle against the grand wizard of the KKK to do so. And so therefore, brothers and sisters, as I wrap this up, because I've gone a little bit too long in the segment, let me just say and be very forthright again. The reality of the situation is that when you live in America, there is always some kind of limiter being placed on your potential and your opportunities, and you have to bounce around for years until you get the right situation and the right opportunity. And some people say, well, us white people go through that too. Well, somehow it works a little bit better for you than it does us. And you want to know why? I got to close this segment out. You want to know why? Because in 2015, you still have either first or onlys. You know what I mean by that? You either have a first or an only. In other words, first black president, first black electrician, first black senator, first black book writer, first black this, first black that. And if it's been more than one, then it's in your town, you're the only. Me and African Walnut actually talk about this all the time, because he is you know, rising to the top in his field, and I'm rising to the top in my field. But we have nobody to talk to about it. We have nobody to talk to about it. And you know why we don't have nobody to talk to about it? Because there's not enough opportunities. And so I am rising to the top in the electronic security field, and if you come to me and you say, well, brother minister, you know, like, can you help me in your field? I can't help you in my field. I'm sorry, I can't. Well, why don't you open your own company and then hire me? Well, you know what? I'm going to do something like that in the future. But at the same time, then when I hire black people, I expose myself to a certain level of liability. I really don't want nobody working for me. I don't give a damn what color you are, and I'm just going to keep it real with you. Because in my business, you could make a mistake, and then the mistake that you make, you could cause lives, dude. And quite frankly, I do not want to murder you because you made a little mistake and it was no skin off your tongue. I don't, and I'm just speaking raw to you tonight. And so the reality of the situation, quite frankly, is this. If you still have only black people and this and only black people and that, or the first black woman, this and that, quite frankly, you do not has a meritocracy. You still have a situation where somebody has a monopoly over it, and you have to beg and plead and pull and tear to get the little crumbs that can fall off the table that you call opportunities, but it's just what somebody else does not want. And that's not a meritocracy. And if we're to build a nation and you're telling me that everybody is just going to level the playing field and everybody gets the same resources, everybody gets the same sundries, everybody, I am not down with that. You can take that damn nation and you can shove it. We'll be back.
Yo, what's up, Kuki?
Yo, what up, Fat Jay?
Yo, what's up, Trav?
What's up, Fat Man? What's over there?
He's ready to get bit.
Oh,
yo, Fat, you know what? I like this beat you brought.
Yo, told you about it.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take it into my ultra laboratory
work
and hook it up.
Man,
yo,
it up.
Bust this. Now, that's funky.
I tell you, boy,
we are. This is so funky that I'm going to send Mo back to the turntables, and you're going to follow the record.
And when I'm on the stage, you just cheer me. Up another level, down below, I'm throwing with the devil in a cage. I'm on the rampage. You need another, wanna know my age? Psych. I carry a magnum. Other groups, I only will rag them and wait. While you debate, I hesitate. Observe your wax style. You've been rapping, talking for miles about nothing. Cause you don't amaze me. I'm like a game, everyone plays me. Regular, extended to the bonus. For some of you, I think you should have noticed it was funky.
Word, man, that was funky.
Adam Black Muhammad says to us in Fall of America on page 88, he says, it is universally known that the very beginning of the American people was from their lower class of European people, and the first rule of President Washington was the fugitive from England, and the common dissatisfied and lower grade of European people followed and boosted his authority. This filled and inhabited America with a very low class and low based people. And then this type of people went into Africa and purchased slaves from among our people, who were also uneducated, most of them, and there were a few who were highly educated. And all of these began to mix with low-base, evil-minded, real citizens of the Western Hemisphere, whites. And when America began to get stronger power, she opened her doors to the underprivileged laborers in overpopulated countries, such as China, Japan, and in Europe, to seek citizenship in America. Now think about that. You know, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad goes further in that article to start talking about the moral degradation. But I want you to think about that for a second as I segue into my dealing with meritocracy in black power plantations. Okay? So just think about that for a quick second. And that is, brothers and sisters, you know, when you look at the political landscape for black people in America now, the Latinos are leapfrogging us. The Japanese are leapfrogging us. The Chinese are leapfrogging us. Every other nationality and color is leaping over you and I, and we are stagnant or even regressing as a people economically, power-wise, you know, wealth-wise, institution-wise. In other words, we here today are powerless and crippled. And we are sitting here arguing with each other when you do not realize that you have been, a limiter has been placed within your circuit to the point where you can't do what you need to do. You see, if you, or you can't do it to the highest capacity, if you study electricity, within all circuits, you have four elements, but really there's three. They tell you it's three, but it's four, okay? So I'm not going to get into that. That's something that me and other electronics and science nerds will deal with. But the three basic elements are voltage, current, and resistance. And basically, if you don't have resistance, then you don't have the flow of electricity in a circuit. You need resistance. Sometimes nothing will flow until you place a resistance in it. And so therefore, because maybe the wire doesn't have enough resistance or the component that you're running electricity doesn't have enough of resistance, so you'll have to, you know, a resistor in there made of, I don't know, sometimes carbon, sometimes, you know, whatever material it may be, but the resistance draws the electricity through the circuit because you cannot have a full circuit unless you have voltage, current, and resistance. And really, what they also say, what one of my teachers said, is you always have capacitance, but that's a different thing, and I don't feel like you want to do that with you because I understand that you're not, you know, electronics, electrician, most of you, so therefore, this is Chinese to you. But just acknowledge this, okay? My dad, you know, the man that taught me just about anything I know about electronics or electricity, he'll say, you know what, son, I got a fan in this car, the fan blows too hard. I'm going to throw a resistor in it and slow it down. That blows my mind. That blows my mind. Nobody talks like that other than us because nobody really understands that. You will go and you'll buy a switch, and you know what that switch will have in it? It'll have a resistor. The resistor will place a certain amount of ohms in the circuit. It will slow everything down. So here's the thing. The thing is, if you can manipulate electricity like that, don't you think somebody can manipulate your goods and services? Don't you think somebody could manipulate your opportunities, your amount of time on a computer if you're an IT person, your amount of time on a camera if you install cameras. Do you understand what I'm saying here? When you read the book Outliers or you listen to the audiobook, which I suggest all of you do, you will realize that Bill Gates, Paul Allen, and the rest of these computer gurus or electronic gurus, they were able as children to have time with computers. They had the opportunity to spend all night programming and practicing programming, and they were willing to put in the time and the effort to learn it. Thing is that they had the opportunity. A lot of you say, well, these kids today, they don't have the opportunity. They have the opportunity that we didn't have yesterday. That's crazy. That's crazy. These children today have less opportunities than you had when you were younger, because today their people, as in the rulers of this country, understand that the more of you and the more people that look like me and you have opportunities, the more we're going to relish it and we're going to excel. So now they put a limiter in it. What do you think all of this legislation in the NFL is all about? Yeah, brothers and sisters, brothers are doing some bad stuff out there. I'm not going to lie. White folks are doing some bad stuff, too, in the NFL, as well as the basketball league, as well as the baseball league. And you do not see their cases as high profile as ours. So what happens is it begins to limit the earning potential for everybody when you put out a false image about everybody being a thug. It's like if you ask the average Republican about the NBA, he's going to say they're all thugs. But the reality of the situation is if you were to do a chart as an amount of legal, illegal, or contact with police, the amount of contact with police that NBA basketball players have and opposed to football players, you would see it's a pale in comparison. NFL dominates police blotter and opposed to NBA basketball players. And so quite frankly, what's all the thug stuff about? Well, if you look at it, there's a whole lot more money in the NBA and the contracts are guaranteed. So because the contracts are guaranteed, it doesn't matter after you sign that contract, if you sneeze for the rest of your 6 years and you don't put no ball in no basket, you get paid. White people do not like that, brothers and sisters. And when they don't like something that you're making money off of, they change the rules. And so therefore, I'm sorry, on to this Black Power Foundation thing. So me, I came in the nation when I was 19 years old, okay? I came under a man who I regard as the greatest black man I ever met on this planet, my teacher, Minister Lyndon X. And I came in, and after playing around for a little while, because like I have told you before, and everybody goes through this, I was very, very nervous and shy about coming in the public with a suit and a bow tie on. But once I got over the shyness, I was down and I was out there every day, all day, every day, every week, every hour, every minute. And it still took me 2 years to become an officer. All I ever wanted to be was a lieutenant. I wanted to be a lieutenant so bad. You know, when you're young, you just want other people to salute you. And I saw, you know, dudes come to attention and stuff like that. I wanted to be a lieutenant so bad. It took me 2 years. But what used to boil my blood, and understand, because you got to hear the full story before you make a judgment. What used to boil my blood is I used to see dudes come in, and within like maybe 3-4 weeks, they would be a squad leader and then soon be a lieutenant. And I'd be out there busting my behind, and none of these dudes would be out there with me. And I'd be like, how the hell is this guy on days of service? You would see brother lieutenant or brother squad leader with the duty dodger. But you would not see them on Monday, Tuesday. You wouldn't see them on Thursday. These are the money days. These are the days where they, you know, separate the men from the boys. You wouldn't see them on these days, and especially Saturday. Then they would show up on these days of service and act all tough, and that would grind my gears. Oh, my God, that would grind my gears. And I would be angry and resentful, but I took it. Because I loved the nation, I loved Honorable Elijah Muhammad, I loved my minister. I just didn't understand. I really didn't understand. And so years later, you know what I found out? Because, you know, maybe 2 years later, I came in, and I would say December 1991, and I became a first officer in late January 1994, one of the proudest days of my life. And so when that happened, I began to realize, you see, my teacher, he used these posts and positions to make people grow. He gave them the opportunity to exercise their authority. Sometimes if you were shy, he would throw you on a post. Sometimes if you didn't know how to speak, he would throw you on a post. Sometimes if you weren't assertive, he would bring it up, because he understood that you as a black man, do you understand what I'm saying here? He understood that you as a black man living in the white man's world, if you were shy, if you were not aggressive enough, if you took a lot of garbage, you would not make it in this world. And to bring out that God ability in you, he throw you on a post, and you may not even have the commitment or the dedication yet. But what he wanted to do, A, was he wanted to be able to scream on you, and B, he wanted you to be able to have to deal with and direct other people. He needed you to be able to take initiative, stuff like that. These are the ways that he used to teach you. When I got on the post and I understood all the responsibilities of it and I understood what he was doing, I loved him, respected him 1,000 times more. Now, let me explain something to you, brothers and sisters. And as Muslims out there, you need to listen up. You go to a mosque or a temple or whatever, and you see Brother Captain So-and-so, he's been there for 3 decades and 4 decades. Sister Captain So-and-so, they've been there for 3 decades and 5 decades, and so and it goes and the list goes on and on. How the hell is that a merit-based system when your captain has been there for 3 decades? You're telling me nobody else had the ability to be the captain? You're telling me nobody else had the ability to be the sister captain or the secretary? It was only Brother Captain So-and-so or Sister Captain So-and-so. They got 5, 6 stripes and 2 stars in their damn uniform. I am completely diametrically opposed to that kind of corrupt garbage. You, when I walk into your building and I see so-and-so and he's been on that post for years, I know what you got. You got a black man and black woman's good old boy network. That's what you have. And when you have that, then I understand that you're not going to go anywhere. And the reason why you're not going to go anywhere is because you're not interested in progression. You're not interested in innovation, and you're not interested in change in advance. You just want to maintain power and keep all of the secrets. More likely than not, you're doing something illegal, and you want to keep the secrets behind closed doors and amongst yourself. In my temple, which used to be my mosque back in the day, man, you never knew who was going to be the captain when you showed up there. You never knew. If you went out of town and you came back, you best believe you see somebody new on that post. And you'd be like, huh, who are you? I'm Brother Captain So-and-so, Brother Fallen. And he'd be like, all right. You never knew. You just never knew. It was always somebody new. I went to Jacksonville to live with my father for 6 months. I came back. You better believe the whole administration was cleaned out. The person that was there was my minister because he did not play that. Do you understand what I'm saying? This is my early contact with the true meritocracy. Their minister did not put me on that post for 2 years because when I was younger, I was a psycho. I mean, I'm just keeping it real with you. I was just coming off the streets. I was crazy. I had a lot of crazy ideas about how to run a black organization, which was not practical. I had no real polish. You know what I'm saying? I'm not saying my mother and father didn't raise me right, but it was not enough polish for me to be on some post because my idea was to just basically yell at the brothers and make them do what I needed to do. I could care less about your feelings. And nobody, this is not the white man's military. Nobody comes there to be yelled at. This is a voluntary program where people are giving up their time and their attention to help black people. Nobody needs to get screamed on. And so, therefore, it took me a long, long, long time. And mind you, in those 2 years, I served various different ministry posts, and I served various different non-commissioned of the guard-only posts, but I did not serve at that one because he knew. He intended to give me the post, but he knew I was not grown enough yet. And so what I'm saying to you is that even though I was out there working every day, I had not proved the mental competence to take the post. That's another level of meritocracy. And if we are to build a nation, if we are to say that we are to acquire land, infrastructure, and nationhood, let me tell you something, brothers and sisters. During the time of Reconstruction, when we reconstruct black society, we're not going to construct black society so some of you bastards could be pharaohs. We're not. I know you like Kemet. I know you like Egypt. I know your name is Tahuti Ankh Ankh Tahuti Ferguson. I know that. I know that your name is Osar Tahuti Ankh Ankh Tahuti Parcells. But quite frankly, we will not make you the pharaoh of our nation. Our nation will be run by the individuals. And the individuals who run the nation will show physical and mental competence to run the nation. It's really just that simple. Men and women who show mental, spiritual, and physical competence to run the nation. You will not set up some damn pharaoh to be the leader of a nation so you could be corrupt as hell and everybody could, man, you get the hell out of here with that. That is not going to fly. It's not going to fly. It's not going to fly with something I'm a part of. It's not, because I haven't seen it too much. And you may say, well, Menzel, you're talking against the, you know, you're talking against the Kemetic brothers. Well, let me ask you something. It's the same goes for Muslims who want to be down in a new nation. We're not going to set you up as the leader. That day is over and should have been over a long time ago. And as I said before, and I believe this, centralized revolution is dead, brothers and sisters. Centralized revolution is dead. Centralized revolution never really made sense, but we had competent men that did, you know, that conducted centralized revolution back in the day, a la Honorable Elijah Muhammad, Noble Drew Ali, Marcus Garvey. But today, I wouldn't trust none of y'all as the central head of no, I wouldn't trust myself neither, and I don't have to. I don't want to run no nation and just be me and everybody listen to me. Are you crazy? This is 2015. It's too much technology. It's too much knowledge, wisdom, understanding, and information out there for us to try to run a nation with one dude just talking and one dude just leading and the rest of us just following. That is dead. You are dead, and you're not bringing that corrupt piss water garbage into our nation. You can go to hell and stay here in America and take your licks and, you know, from the white man in any country of your choice. We'll be back.
School like this, bust it, so get into it.
Understand the sound you're listening. It's a band with nitroglycerin with horns and trumpets. I really bumped this track up, cause I knew I must get you to dance across the floor. Plus give myself more of
you're enjoying the show. I have not been this live in a long time. I feel very good about this. And I hope that, but more importantly than how I feel or whatever, more importantly than anything, I hope you come understand where I'm coming from. I really, really hope you understand where I'm coming from, because this is not a game to me. It's not a game to me. This is not something that we're going to set up a glorified, comedic, Islamic, Hebraic, you know what I'm saying, the Wabian, good old boy network like that. I will war against that. And I have enough people I know think like me that we will war against that. Nobody wants to follow you, yo. Nobody wants to follow you. You need to, I promise you, you need to understand nobody wants to follow you. We want a nation that gives opportunities to black people. We do not want to build a nation on a separate territory so that we can eat out of mud bowls and just basically use the rain as water. We don't want that. I swear we don't want that. We want opportunities. We want the ability to build a high black society and experience some of the comforts that we have here and even improve on that. We want the right to do so. Because let me just say this to you, brothers and sisters, before I go into my next segment. Because I really want to talk about something very important to me. You know, this whole net neutrality thing, are you following this? Are you following the government trying to take over and make what's called net neutrality? Now, that it sounds pretty cool. They're for the people. They don't want, you know, telco companies to throttle their networks or charge more, blah, 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 blah. Do you really understand what that means, yo? Do you understand what that means? Do you understand what it means when a government says we're going to take it over? Do you understand that? See, for me, I don't want to come off as a Hannity Michael Savage, Rush Limbaugh, Bill O'Reilly conservative. I don't. But there's some things that you have to understand did not come from them. It's just common sense, B. And quite frankly, let's just get down to it, okay? All right? Any organization, any particular city, any particular body, whatever, that has had the same leadership, has had the same thing take over it. One person speaks and nobody else speaks. One person doesn't. Anything like that has no growth and no development. And this is how this was explained to me, and this kind of blew my mind, okay? Now, you remember the phone companies, right, being New York Telephone, Ma Bell, and the rest of them. And remember how basically it was a monopoly. It was only but one company, okay? Now, think about it. When you were younger, and I was younger, because I am now 43 going on 44, you basically had your dial-up phone, and then it took you like 15, 20 years maybe. Then you had a push-button phone, and then it took you like maybe another 10 years, and then you had caller ID. Do you call that innovation? Do you call that advancement? Is that what you call that? So you're telling me that the only advances in phone technology was to go from a rotary phone to a push-button phone in decades, B? That's what you're talking about? And who's responsible for that level of growth, that stagnation? It's the government. And so, therefore, when you live inside a dictatorship, when you live inside of a monopoly controlled by one maniacal person, this stunts competition. Competition stunts growth. Because think about it this way, like I said earlier today, because we're building a cake here, right, and it has layers. Okay, I talked about the fact that you make more money when you can provide differentiation. And differentiation comes from a person being able to look into and see what there's a need of the customer and give it to them in a different way, but a high-quality way. Because being different just to make different doesn't make you any money and it doesn't do anything. But when you can see what other people don't see and offer a service that other people don't offer, if for any other reason, it causes everybody else to step their game up. Because, brothers and sisters, this is the thing that scares me. When I sit around brothers and sisters and they talk about being in the new nation, and they talk about we won't have any kind of money, we will just be doing barter and trade, and I'd be like, okay, that I can feel you on that. And that way, nobody's rich. Whoa, slow down. Slow down, B. Slow down. The thing about me is that the only hindrance I have to my health is asthma. Other than that, if you look at me, I look like I'm 16 years old. If you saw me move, you would think I was 16 years old. I'm high. I'm fast moving. I'm high energy. I'm type A with a couple of B-plus personality defects, but I'm a mile a minute. I do not want to be limited to your level of work ethic and your level of understanding and your level of urgency. I don't. And I also don't want you to cheapen my hard work and my labor by saying, well, I'm going to trade you these five corn chips for your security system. You crazy, B? Are you crazy? And so what I'm saying to you is that when you look at it and you extrapolate or you take the net neutrality argument and you apply it to so-called socialist nationhood, which is a lot what a lot of you are advocating, to me, I can't get down with that. I'm not saying that the government shouldn't help you. I'm not saying that the government shouldn't step in. But I do not agree with government completely controlling everything because that is going to stunt innovation. It's going to stunt a progress. And quite frankly, that will just put us in the same situation as everybody else, and eventually we will be defeated because revolution is precipitated by men and women not being able to have upward mobility. And I want to say that again so you can hear it. Revolution is precipitated by men and women not being able to move upwards. When you think that you are stalled and you have to stay at the same place for the rest of your life and you got half a ball, then you say, the hell with this, I'm going to fight because I know I can do better. And I don't need no damn government limiting me. And this is what starts revolutions. This is what starts revolutions. Your brothers and sisters who look at this black power movement and the multifacets of it, and you call all of it revolution, listen, I'm not going to insult you, but I'm just saying that it's a lot more nuanced than that, brother and sister. It's a lot more nuanced. Not every part of this struggle that you see is revolution. When you see brothers debating each other, that's not revolution. When you see brothers and sisters just basically selling papers and pies just to keep their rent going, that's not revolution. You know what revolution is? Revolution is brothers and sisters. I promise you, man. I get knocked off and knocked off at least once a show now. At least once a show I get knocked off. Either way, basically what I'm saying to you is that, quite frankly, brothers and sisters, the whole socialist model needs to be rethunked. I'm going to do this electricity model, and I'm going to come back with my next segment that means something personal to me. I'm going to bring Colin in, and we're going to get on out of here because I got to go do some stuff. Okay, so understand this. When you wire something, you have series wiring, parallel wiring, and then you have series parallel, okay? Anybody that tells you that there's no such thing as series parallel, never study electronics, slap them in the face, tell them don't tell you nothing else about electricity. Quite frankly, there's series, there's parallel, then there's series parallel. When you wire something in series, that basically means that one leg of the power, whether it be positive or negative, is all connected to, you know, connected together. In other words, like there's a whole line and the voltage has to pass through both legs of every one of this particular line in order to get from point A to point B. When you wire in parallel, there's more than one way for it to get to point A and point B. When you wire in series, there's only one way you go from the start to finish, and you have to go through every branch of the circuit to get there, okay? When you wire it in parallel, there's more than one way for you to get there, and it could take any way. And generally what it does, because electricity follows the path of least resistance, it will go through that particular path that has the least resistance at that particular time. All right? So now is this, brothers and sisters, because like I said before, when you live in America, they always put a limiter on what you want to do. And if you, they look at you and I basically as sources of energy and sources of power. The Matrix told you that. You know, the various different movies about time have told you that, and you should know that at this particular time. When they say that you're selling your labor, like quite frankly, if you're selling your labor, that means you're broke because you can either sell labor or you can sell mental skill and ability. And at some point, you will have to labor, but they pay a lot more for mental skill and ability. When they see you as energy, that means basically you need to get out there and physically do the work. It doesn't require you to think too much, and that means they're not going to pay you too much because they look at you as a replaceable commodity. In some cases, like myself, I'm in a situation where I'm thinking and I'm doing labor, and the part that I do is that labor is tied to my thinking, and so therefore what happens is it's not easy to replace somebody like me because in my industry it's not you don't work on autopilot. You are constantly thinking, innovating, and coming up with new stuff, and so therefore when you are a power source and somebody else is a power source, white folks will wire you in parallel. In other words, they'll basically bring you all together and the power, the energy starts and it can get to its destination through each and every one of you. And quite frankly, it takes whatever level of resistance it wants to take. And so when you think about it, they're going to do it that way because they want you to work hard for them and they could care less which one of you get the job complete. So they'll bunch you together in parallel and make you work that way. We are advocating in a meritocratic society. We're coming together in series. And when you put people together in series, the voltage doubles, the voltage triples, the voltage quadruples. The more people you put there, the higher the voltage is. When you wire, see, I'm getting into something that you probably won't understand, so I think I'm going to have to stop. Listen, brothers and sisters, at the end of the day, At the end of the day, let's come down to bare basics. Revolution is precipitated when men and women feel that they cannot move up or forward and they have no choice but to revolt because they know they can do better. White folks are calling for revolution. Black people are calling for revolution. What part of this do you fall upon? We'll be back. Thank you. I didn't know I was on mute. Sorry, brothers and sisters. I got a couple of minutes left here, so I want to address this very important thing before I break in Colin and Chef Rob and talk to them for a couple of seconds, and then I'm going to get on out of here. But this is very important to me, and I have to say this. You know, just recently, maybe 2 weeks ago, Nation of Islam in general recognized the passing of Sister Tainetta Muhammad. And whatever you think about her, I mean, some call her mother. I'm not going to call her that. I'm just not going to call her that. Okay. I see her as Sister Tainetta. She's an elder. And that mother stuff is for the church. So I'm not flying that way. However, I just want to say this and be very frank. Long before there was a so-called lecture circuit, long before there was what it was on 125th, where dudes was going into the deep science of the stars and, you know, the pebbles and the ground and stuff like that, really, Sister Tainetta, a woman, a black woman, was the first one to bring the teachings of Honorable Elijah Muhammad and specifically Islam more to a science. And people ridiculed her for that because they said, oh, she's making it too complicated. It's not about that. It's about God. And so many people wanted more of a religious side of Islam. They didn't want the scientific side. So Sister Tainetta was going into ancient indigenous numerology. She was going into, you know, ancient indigenous astronomy and astrology. I mean, she was a beast when it came to research and information. The woman was known to have read the Holy Quran, the entire Quran, which is about 1,000 pages, once a week. Now, I don't give a damn what you think, brothers and sisters, but you have to respect somebody reading any book that has 1,000 pages once a week. I mean, come on now. Come on. And so therefore, I just want to see, sister, listen, good, bad, or indifferent, there's a lot of garbage around your name. I mean, I saw a dude online say, yay, the fraud is dead and all this other stuff. There's a grown man older than me. I just have to say, when you do stuff like that, you're an idiot. I could care less, man, if you know, listen, if you felt that way and you said it in private, that's cool with me, even though it's kind of, still kind of immature. I always thought I would feel that way about a certain person when they die. I do. But I know that I would never say that online. And quite frankly, at this point, the way I'm feeling, after I saw that, I don't even know that I should feel that way. I really don't even know that I should feel that way. I just think, brothers and sisters, that, man, like, you will call the white man the devil, call him all sorts of things like that. When you come online when somebody dies, it meant so much to so many people like that, and say, yay, the fraud is dead, you are an idiot. And you deserve whatever horrible thing happens to you behind that, because I know for a fact that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad did not want us to disrespect anybody's death. He did not. And so for me, like, I just want to say I salute you, my sister, because even though you were on that side and I was on this side, and clearly I was definitely on this side at this point, I still respected you. And quite frankly, when you passed away, I felt some kind of way. It would affect me that way. I really didn't. I was just like, you know, I never even, first of all, I never really considered you dying or what would happen when you did. But it's just like anything. You never know how much people feel, you know, how they affect you. Until they pass away, you find out about it, and you're just like, wow, you know, I wasn't really paying attention to that person, but now they're not on this planet no more. And to me, everybody knows that I try my best to have females on the show, black women on this show. I do. I have a lot of black. I'm not going to say I have the most black women on my show of anybody. It's an ignorant statement because I don't listen to all shows, and there's hundreds of thousands of shows on Blog Talk Radio just from the conscious circuit. But I will say that all of these brothers who say that they don't give a damn about religion and it's all about African spirituality or whatever do not have no females on this show. And that means you're a fraud in my judgment. That means you're a fraud, quite frankly. But when it comes down to dealing with this sister, look, sister, I just rest in peace. May Allah be pleased with you. I know they say speak not in the way of a righteous person that's being, you know, dead or past. But from me to you, Minister Dawood, I give you a salute. because you didn't have to do what you did after the messenger passed. You did not have to study. You did not have to try to bring the science. You did not have to do that. You could have just disappeared and just, you know, just took care of your children, but you chose not to. You chose to stay out front. You chose to give the information, and you chose to keep our feet on the ground by bringing it into a scientific level. And again, you are the forerunner for all the powerful men and women that you see out there today, because nobody was digging into the science and bringing out that kind of science like you were. Whereas people were laughing at you, now you're a pioneer. And for that, I salute. We'll be back. Okay, brothers, so I only got a couple of minutes left, and it is my pleasure and my humble honor to bring through my brothers, Colin Genesis and Brother Rob. Colin, can you hear me?
Yeah, what's going on, brother? Brother, thanks for the show. Thanks for the show, man.
You lit it up.
Man, you took me to dimensions, man. That's the whole thing, man. We think alike, right? But when I hear somebody else say the same thing that's on my mind after studying, and it's coming to realization, because you're like me. You're a realist. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
You're a realist. What you said about your work, you work your ass off. Why should anybody think you're going to have a situation where everybody's going to I never liked that. Socialism. You know, you
right.
tell me the smartest person, that kid that's smart is a genius, that can make a manufacturer a new car that can run on sugar, he should basically not benefit from his science and genius and everything. Now, you should give it to the dumb kid that wants to play and do nothing, like, give him all the same thing because it's all in the community and all this freaking nonsense. I'm over it. And the bottom line, what it is, let me tell you something what it is. It's this culture of bullying and thuggery. People have this idea that intellectual people are weak, with pushovers, they'll use you as a worker. They can't stomach the idea that they might have to be in an organizational situation where they have to take orders or listen to a black person with brains. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
They don't stomach that
for
white people. You know, and that is a root cause of it. No black person wants to submit to another black person and admit that somebody black is either smarter than they are, better organized, maybe because that person had a family that had a father, mother, and everything like that. They did the right thing, raised their kid right, and gave them the opportunity. And so that kid is and they pushed him to do education. Your family didn't do that. And so that's what it's
right.
So you should punish that family for doing right or make him feel like he's an oddball or different because he went to a better school or he had good grades and stuff like that. Our whole way of thinking has to change. You know,
right? Without a doubt, brother.
And we're going
into
the conscious movement. It's just that a lot of brothers try to debate me all the time, and I'm like, you cannot win with me. I know what I'm talking about. I'm well read. I read thousands of books. I read things beyond your garbage that you read out of your hotep circuit. You know, you can't change history on me. You know, don't give me your garbage or whatnot. Don't tell me the first Chinese kung fu fighters were black Chinese in China when these fools are getting away with freaking murder, mental murder. You know, we got fools in the movement, and they're taking over. Everybody got a YouTube channel and setting up and whatnot, putting dirty dashiki in their pajamas on, and they think they know everything. I'm sick of it.
Right. Let me ask you something, Colin. In regards to your business being insurance,
yes.
Can you give the listeners some way in which you, a limiter, was placed on what you were trying to do, you know, when you were trying to come up with what you were doing?
Let me tell you exactly what you said. Let me give you an example. Now, insurance is a little different. In this field, there's a lot of black men and women that are insurance brokers, agents. They do well, all right? But nobody's ever gotten to that FMO level because it's not ever going to happen. We just all concede that. You know, that's
right.
Field marketing. Those are the people that deal directly with insurance companies. Insurance companies broker out to agents. They'll let you be a broker, and you can get people under you. And I'm a general agent. My sister's a manager general agent. That's the highest we'll ever go. You know,
right.
I got agents under me. I'm a, like a, let's say, my sister's a manager general agent. She's been in 10 years. I've been in 7 years now. I'm a general agent. I can hire agents under me. And then there's regular agents, you know, just delegated agents. Right? On the bottom is delegated agents, right? Now, that's as high as we'll ever go. Any black firm will ever go. You know that. And there's no sizzle box because to be an IMO, you got to have, like, literally to perform an IMO, a field marketing organization, where you're marketing to hundreds of agents and you're marketing insurance companies' products and paying out things. You got to have a certain amount of banking assets. You got to it's a big thing that goes back. I mean, you got to be big time, and that's never going to happen, you know?
Right.
You have to be
right.
on the state, knows people on the state, each state boards, commissions. It's an old boy network that goes back, and you know, the bottom line is this. So the bottom line is this. When it comes to infrastructure in America, the infrastructure is not ours. All we deal with is, like you said, excess and the crumbs that's left on the table. You can make money off the crumbs. I'm not saying don't go for it.
Sure.
But just stop beating black people over the head by why we haven't gotten to the point where white people have gotten in America, you know, without recognizing that the infrastructure is in the hands of white people that's well-established hundreds of years before we even came to the table, you know?
Right.
So all
without
we can do is basically, look, we want to, one day, our hope and thing is to build Africa, build a nation state for ourselves and modernize Africa. We have to modernize. You know, we have to modernize Africa. If Africa modernized and we built a nation state, we would not have these problems. Our problems would be instead of worrying about racism, we worrying about basically building railways that go 500 miles per hour, you know, or 1,000 miles per hour. That's what we should have. We be able to give our kids in the future. You know, they build the next wave of science and industry and infrastructure and everything. We're still going back in time. America was saying, like, we had a march on Selma today. Oh, this, that, and the other thing, Selma, what? So, in other words, basically, you're telling me the only thing I got to look forward to is to beg white people for crumbs and be at their mercy of another race? Submit, swallow. I can't keep swallowing my pain and pride, you know? Swallow your pain and pride just to be called an American? Are you nuts? Are you crazy?
Exactly.
Are you ridiculous? You know, this is insane. And so that's what I say. Yeah, but insurance business, yes. I'm doing okay in it. I know that I can do a lot of money, make a lot of money in insurance. But what I really want to do is, if we have our own nation, guess what? Insurance company wants to sell policies. I'm going to be an FMO. It's going my corporate is going to be the FMO that's going to distribute all the policies and hire all the brokers and everything like that. If you want to sell policies in this country, you're going to come through me.
Right.
You know, that's where the money is. That's when you're making $50 million a year. You know, in insurance, you know?
Mm. Yeah, and the thing is, we don't never have opportunities to control that kind of stuff. I mean, we rise to, like, high positions for us. And because we've never been there before, we're like, damn, look at brother. You know, he's really high in that corporation.
I can tell you so many stories in the insurance business, right? Let me give you an example. There's an insurance company, I don't know if I can say this, the company's called United, right? Right. And there used to be a company called North Carolina Mutual, owned by black people, right? It was bought out by a company. They brought all these niggas. This is where I learned a lot. This is back in 2009. I took a job with them, right, for a few months, right? It was all black management and everything like that. But I figured out, when I got there, I found out what had happened was they turned that insurance company, where you're a captive agent with them, into a glorified plantation. In other words, they bought the other the insurance company out, right? Hired their hired black managers and everything, and all it was a glorified plantation. You know, you were making no really good money, no advancement, no anything, and it was just a glorified plantation. And the bottom line is this, and the black people that are on top, you can't tell them nothing because they get the lordship over you. And the worst thing to happen is one of those type of niggas, even though, like I said, I do what I want. They're the boss. I have to take my own medicine or live my own thing. You have to give them respect. They're your boss. They're paying your paycheck. Just anything. But I have never seen so much arrogance and so much abuse, black on black abuse, as you do in the black professional world. That's the worst thing. Thing is when you have black people when the company is white and they basically they want to rob people or exploit people, they hire black managers because they can get away with doing it because you can't excuse them of racism. You know,
sure.
They hire black
without
managers.
Without a doubt. You know
they hire black managers, and they go to work on you, you know. So it's hard to break out of that, and so that's what it is. So you're not an advanced, but they're satisfied. I got the office. I'm the managing such and such service, and that's what they want. They got a title and everything like that, but you're not making any advancements, you're not doing anything.
Right, and then when you meet them in the public, they look at you like, you know, because I asked my pops. Because I used to see other locksmiths, you know what I'm saying, from different countries, different cities, and they were black. And every time I laid eyes on another locksmith that was black, he always treated me like I had Ebola or something like that. And I was like, what the hell is wrong with this dude? You know what I'm saying? He's black, I'm black. Mm-hmm. I mean, he had to go through a lot to be where he's at. So I asked my dad, I said, why, when I meet people that's in my profession, do they treat me like this? And he said, listen, he said, this is what we were taught to do. We were taught to treat each other this way. He said, but the main thing that you got to realize is that he has a false sense of status, being the only black locksmith in his city. So when you come through and you black, you threaten his false sense of status because now it's two of y'all.
Yep.
So you're telling me the same thing happens in the insurance field?
Oh, yeah, yeah. The bottom line is this. They belittle you. They berate you. It's just really bad. That's why I said I'm an independent insurance broker, right? I work for myself. I work with the insurance. I work for an FMO. I contract with through the insurance company. You know, I don't work for anybody. When I did have a taste of working for an insurance company, and I'll be honest with you, right? Anytime you work for any company and you see a bunch of black people in there, whatnot, run through the next door. You know, run through the freaking next door, right? Especially here in the South. If you see a lot of black people, I don't care, and you know what's getting bad, too. Let me tell you something what's getting bad. What's going to shock a lot of people? The same thing is starting to happen in the IT field. People spend all this money in college education, IT field, and they got a way how to exploit IT workers, too. You know?
Sure. Yep.
And so it's basically the whole thing, the paradigm has to change. I believe our expansion in Africa will set people free, not just black people, white people, too. You know?
Right.
Because these
companies
basically are pushing kids to go out there and get these IT fields empty, and what they do is have an abundant supply of labor. It's the slave plantation system, exploitation system of capitalism in America, which I like capitalism, but I like America's form of capitalism. I like the Japanese form of capitalism. You know?
Right.
It's the same system. They exploit labor. When they no longer need you, they throw you out the door.
Sure. Brother Rob,
and if they can basically get away with paying you half of what they pay you, they can. If they can outsource the job, threaten you with outsource the job so you take a pay cut, whatever, they'll do it. The job, once your job is 3 years, it's, you know something, we're going to move and operate someplace else. We're shutting down. There's no job security. They use you and they throw you out. You know, there's no way American society, and particularly black society, can sustain this. You know, there's no way because it's destabilizing whole communities. Is breaking up the structure. The whole reason why people built families is because they had a farm, and they knew the farm was always going to be there to go like that. They had a factory job. Factory job ain't going nowhere. This, that, and the other. Now you have a situation where you don't know where your job's going to be there in the next 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
No doubt.
And, so,
and that's why I posted that the other day. When I was talking about USA Today said that basically that the economy is getting better, but it's only getting better for skilled people. You know what I'm saying? But if you're a factory worker, you basically asked out pretty much because it hasn't really changed much for you. But let me get Rob's opinion real quick because I got to bounce because I got to leave. Brother Rob, can you give us your opinion or can you comment?
Oh, man, I'm listening. Greetings, brother. How you doing?
I'm doing well, man. Did you take that vacation?
Not yet, man. Not yet. I got it couple of weeks, man. I think on about the 22nd. I'm trying to get out of here about the 22nd. But yeah, I agree with what I was hearing, man. You know, I agree. So my biggest thing is that since we recognize the problems and we recognize we got a whole lot of that look like us who don't think like us, you know, we need to and plant that seed in the youth. That's what it's all. The more energy you focus in on dealing with the youth, because you know,
right.
I hate to say this, but you know, if I need to speak with niggas, need to die off. That's it.
Sure. I got you. Yeah, that's something that I myself am in, you know, discussions with a couple of local groups here, like one called Community Fathers, because I realized that that's where really where it's at, is trying to shape and mold the minds of the youth, because we're trying to, you know what I'm saying, there's a lot of people that think like us, but it's not a great deal of people who think like us. And for us to really make a change, we're going to have to affect the youth and change the world through their minds and help them to understand some of the stuff that we're talking about, like land, infrastructure, nationhood, and how we can have our own separate territory that's a meritocracy. Because if we don't, we're going to grow up with the same freaking disappointment that we had. And mm-hmm. at that point, I would feel like I failed, to be very honest with you.
Yeah, you know, just basically got to go ahead and try to deal with the youth and try to create a program where you can go ahead and deal with their young and try to deal with some of these young guys who are teenagers and just that young mindset, because no revolution can go ahead and be successful without it. So, you know, you keep on trying to go ahead and fight with these fools. You got to tune them out and focus on the work.
Right.
Deal with these idiots, man. Just leave these fools alone, man. Only recently I got a lot more engaged in what I'm trying to do and trying to tune out some of these morons. So this is, you just spend too much time trying to go and tell them that you're a moron. So you know, let's deal with the youth.
Right. I got you. Well, all right, brothers, I'm going to end the show because I got to get going. I thank you all for being here. I thank you for your support. And we'll be back next week, and I'm going to do – actually, originally I was going to do something else, but next week what I'm going to do is Empire versus Dynasty Warriors, because mm-hmm. I sat when I was in the hotel, and I forced myself to watch every Empire episode. And I get what they're trying to do now. It was an experience, because if you – you know, good, bad, or indifferent. If you, let me just put it this way. If you have any aversion to seeing a man kissing another man, it's wow.
Yeah, I watched the first episode, and that was it, man. As soon as the dude guy came out of bed with the other guy, white boy, I said, no, this is, I said, bump that. I had enough of that. I think I got through the first episode, and that was it, man. I haven't watched it since.
Oh, my Lord, Kali. It's not only him. That they have to sit there, and they ruined her by making her, you know, she's in bed with a white girl. It's crazy, you know. But
yeah, well, they're basically, what they Lee Daniel have teamed up with white racists, and they're gonna basically try to what they're doing. They know this nationalist stuff is growing, and all this stuff is growing. But then what they're making is a simple mistake. One simple mistake they're making is this, right? They underestimate the fact. They underestimate our loyalty to America. You know,
right.
they really have no idea how much we ancestors sacrificed, swallowed their pain and pride and the anger and everything like that. But that anger, that undercurrent is still there, you know.
Right.
And these people are playing with fire, you know. They're playing with fire. They're like throwing gasoline on fire. And they're about to see, they are about to see black, they're seeing it right now, but they think they're going to stop it. And they're like, damn, even Barack Obama right now, his speech this summer was all about black people. I know y'all angry, please, but we got America. He made that was just a plea to black America, about America, you know?
Yeah,
they know black people are over this country. And when you have 45 million people over the country, this country is in serious trouble. And we're going to keep lighting the fire, you know? I'm going to keep lighting the fire until an inferno happens, you know? I don't give a damn what they think, you know? They made their bed. They should have thought about that before they brought us over here. You know, the bottom line
right.
is I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. You know, and the fire's going to keep burning.
Yes, sir. Well, I'm gonna get on out of here, brother. So I thank y'all for coming, and I will see y'all next Sunday.
All right, Minister. Though, thanks for the show, brother. Peace. Thanks
yeah,
for having
no
me.
Problem.
Yes, sir.
Peace,
all right,
brother.
Rob.
All right. Good.
And if you do not like it, well, yes, you can bite it. And don't you go and get excited. I'm Shantae, he's Biz Markie. Side by side, you know it's me. No, I don't.
speak French. When I say we, I mean us too, not yes sirree. Everyone knows that I am much better. So more Bismarck and get it together. Talk to the girls, you know they are whack. Tell those crabs they sound like cats. Meow, 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 meow.
Should serve as a viable replacement for palladium.
Thanks, Dan.
Unfortunately, it is impossible to synthesize.
Mm-hmm. Get ready for a major remodel, fellas. We're back in hardware mode.